Chapter 12. Signor Speranza steps in it. Friday was the first day of filming, but Signor Speranza was late. At 9:30, he was still in his pyjamas, his eyes bloodshot, his hair and moustache uncombed, and engaged in a battle of wills in the back garden with a schnauzer. "It's up to you when we can go inside, my friend," he was saying in a slightly hysterical tone. "All you have to do is the business God gave you to do, and then we can go inside." This business, as Signor Speranza had taken to calling it, had already been done over the last 3 days by this young schnauzer on the kitchen floor, the bathroom floor, the bedroom floor, and the inside of both his slippers. It was the slippers that made Signor Speranza think it was being done on purpose. "Nino," Betta called out the kitchen window, "Smilzo is on the phone." "Okay," Signor Speranza called back, and then he pointed at the dog. "We are not done here." Signor Speranza took the call in the kitchen, where Betta was mashing potatoes for croquettes on the counter. "Boss," Smilzo's voice was muffled and panicked. "I think I made a mistake, boss." "What is it?" Signor Speranza was not fully paying attention. He was tracking the schnauzer around the kitchen and waiting for it to strike. "On Tuesday, boss, when I was here by myself, Signor Maestro asked if he could do craft services, that is, the food for the cast and crew, you know, on the first day of filming, and I said yes." Signor Speranza tucked the phone receiver between his ear and his shoulder and made an agitated grab for the schnauzer, who promptly darted under the table. "So what?" Smilzo sighed. "So, right now he is carving a roast on your desk under the heat lamp." The image of this floated before Signor Speranza's eyes, and his temples throbbed. He thought for a moment of throwing a fit, but he was too tired. That was what happened to one's fighting spirit when one had had one's sleep murdered by a schnauzer. "Just move the compendium," he muttered and hung up. "Good morning, Papa," said Gemma, breezing past him on her way through the kitchen. She was tapping out a message on her phone. "Good morning," Signor Speranza grumbled. When she was gone, he turned to Betta and frowned. "It's a little early for the King of Roma to be out of bed, isn't it?" But Betta shook her head and smiled. "I don't think it's him," she whispered, as she smashed a potato with the back of a fork. "I think it's Ernesto Maestro." Signor Speranza raised his eyebrows. "Ernesto Maestro? Since when did Gemma—" "Nino!" Betta stopped mashing and pointed her fork at a puddle on the floor. "You are taking that dog with you," she said. Signor Speranza's moustache bristled. "That dog is Carlotta's responsibility," he thundered. "You should tell her to take care of it." Betta rolled her eyes and resumed mashing. "Oh, yes," she said, "and maybe after that I'll have her clean the gutters, too." Smilzo had made another, much more serious, mistake while Signor Speranza was out traipsing around Prometo with a basket of crocchetti di patate, but it didn't come to light until later that day. When Signor Speranza and his furry charge arrived at Speranza and Sons at 10:30, filming was nearly ready to begin. Antonello was standing head-to-head with Smilzo in front of a huge poster of the Colosseum, reviewing the script. Bella Bisi and Carmelo Trezza were running lines as Bella's mother, Signora Bisi, knelt on the floor pinning the hem of her daughter's dress. Ernesto Maestro was off by himself in a corner, his hands cupped around his ears and singing softly. Signor Speranza let the schnauzer down onto the floor and gazed around, blinking. "Out of control," he thought bleakly. "This is now officially out of control." He wondered if he could face an entire afternoon of lying to all these people. "Smilzo," he called. Smilzo hastened over.
"Yes, boss."
"Smilzo, I'm putting you in charge," he said, nearly choking on the words. He had certainly never said them before. Of course, all this film business being make-believe made it a little easier. Smilzo just stared.
"I'm in charge, boss," he asked.
"I am in charge of the film now." The impudence of this suggestion rescued Signor Speranza, at least temporarily, from the iron grip of his conscience.
"Of course, you're not in charge of the film," he snapped. "But I'm going to let you oversee the shooting today. I am too tired."
Smilzo nodded, chastened. But by the time Signor Speranza had chased the schnauzer to the back of the shop, Smilzo was waving his script around and making an announcement as if he owned the place.
"All right, people," he shouted. "We are going to begin now. There can be no noise, no mobiles, nothing."
He signaled to Ernesto, who pulled down the blinds for the front windows and switched off the overhead lights. Carmelo Trezza dragged over a floor lamp whose shade had been removed and switched it on. Antonella stood in front of the giant poster and took a deep breath.
"On the count of three, I will say action," said Smilzo.
Signor Speranza, who had seen the schnauzer disappear under his desk, got down on his hands and knees and peered.
"Dog," he whispered, "come out of there right now."
He could see the tiny creature sitting back on its haunches and staring up in the direction of the delicious smell wafting from Signor Maestro's carving board up above. Signor Speranza reached his arm under the desk and gave the dog a nudge. He was rewarded with a miniature growl.
"Oddio," he muttered and stood up.
Signor Maestro gave him a curt nod over the heat lamp.
"Speranza," he grunted.
"Maestro," sneered Signor Speranza.
"Action," called Smilzo.
The filming started, and Signor Speranza and Signor Maestro went quiet, both of them with their arms crossed and looking out at the showroom.
"Cut," said Smilzo. "Let's try it again."
The scene played over and over, and soon Signor Speranza got bored. His eyes slid over the smorgasbord of meats ranged over every available centimetre of his desk.
"Do you have any vegetables, signore?" he whispered for a joke, but Signor Maestro did not react. His eyes did not even flicker.
Signor Speranza squirmed and looked back at the filming, and only then did Signor Maestro speak.
"My Ernesto is very pleased with the role you gave him," he said. "We, my wife, had been getting a little worried. Nothing for him to do but cut meat. Now he is happy."
Signor Speranza looked at Signor Maestro, surprised. "Is that right, signore?" he said. But the butcher just kept staring ahead like the stuffed boar over his shop.
"Imagine that," thought Signor Speranza,
and he recalled Signor Rossi and what he had said about his daughter Serena.
"A miracle, signore. It has been like a miracle."
"And Speranza?" Signor Maestro grunted.
"Si, signore." "Your dog just pissed on my shoe."
Signor Speranza exited Speranza and Sons with the schnauzer held aloft over his head, hollering for everyone to get out of the way. When he reached the street, he scanned frantically for a patch of grass. If there was anything he had learned about infant dogs over the last 3 days, it was that where there were liquids, solids soon followed. His eyes lit on the church lawn, and throwing caution to the wind, he sped there. But no sooner had he deposited the pup on the ground than Don Rocco emerged.
"Signore,"
the priest called, bustling through the church doors and flagging him down. Signor Speranza winced. He looked down at the dog and contemplated making a run for it. But for once in its life, the creature was doing exactly what Signor Speranza had wanted it to do. There was no escape. The moment had arrived. Signor Speranza glanced at the sky. It was just as well he could not avoid this priest forever. He waved feebly back.
"Hello, father, you are looking well."
Don Rocco came nearer.
"Signore, I want to talk to you."
Signor Speranza held up his hand.
"I would not come any closer, father," he warned. "He is a very big fan of shoes."
Don Rocco stopped abruptly and frowned at the silken-eared interloper at his feet. He pointed.
"Is that a dog, signore? I didn't know you liked dogs."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes.
"Of course I don't like dogs, father. Don't be ridiculous. Nobody likes dogs."
Don Rocco took this explanation in his stride.
"Signore," he said, "I have something important to discuss with you."
Signor Speranza took a deep breath. Here it was. Don Rocco was going to accuse him outright of lying, and then he, Signor Speranza, was going to... What was he going to do? He thought dizzily of Gemma laughing at the dinner table. What was he going to do?
"I have heard from some of my parishioners, signori, that you are collecting money."
Don Rocco peered keenly at Signor Speranza, seemingly unaware or unperturbed that there was a schnauzer climbing one of his socks.
"I understand that you are trying to reach a total of 70,000 euros for this film project of yours."
Signor Speranza's moustache twitched.
"It's not against the law to raise money for a film, father."
Don Rocco agreed. "No, it isn't." Signor Speranza squirmed. He did not like the way Don Rocco was peering at him and being so polite.
"How much do you still need, signore?" the priest asked quietly.
"To have your 70,000. Signor Speranza was startled. This was not how he had expected the conversation to go.
1,300, father," he said, without having to think.
Don Rocco withdrew a drawstring pouch from his pocket. Carefully he counted out 13 green bills. Then he looked directly into Signor Speranza's eyes and spoke in a clear, ringing voice.
"If what you say is true, signore, if you really do need this money to make a film for Prometo, then I want you to have it."
The 12 o'clock sun hovered over the steeple of St. Agata, and a fiery beam of light refracted round the old spire and onto the sheaf of bills in Don Rocco's outstretched hand. Signor Speranza stared at them, and so did the errant schnauzer, who was, for the second time that day, sitting back on its haunches and paying attention. Signor Speranza's heart pounded. A confession stuck in his throat. He swallowed.
I do need the money, father," he said.
He forced himself to look back at the priest. He did not blink. After what seemed an eternity, the priest nodded.
"Then I believe you, signore."
He pressed the money into Signor Speranza's hand. "I want you to have it." Signor Speranza watched Don Rocco go back into the church, and then, plucking the schnauzer off the ground, he whirled around, his mind already spinning the dial of the safe at Speranza and Sons. He had not even crossed the street, however, when a scene at the café caught his eye.
"Signora!"
he called to Signora Catuzza, who was bustling amongst the tables, a tray in one hand and a dishcloth over her shoulder. Signor Speranza hastened to meet her, the puppy squirming in his hands.
"What's happening here, signora?"
he asked, looking around agog. Every table at the café was occupied. There was a queue, also, of people waiting to be seated. Signor Speranza scanned the faces and realized, with a sudden effervescent thrill, that he did not recognize most of them.
Signora Catuzza dabbed her forehead with the back of her arm and beamed. "I have no idea, signore, but I hope it keeps up. You want me to get you something?"
"No, no," Signor Speranza waved his hands. "Don't let me interrupt you."
He looked around again at the tables full of young people and did a kind of jig.
"Mangia, mangia,"
he encouraged them.
"Che bello!"
His heart bursting, Signor Speranza glanced around the little square and noticed a pack of teenagers going into Bisi's Emporio. He dashed there also and ducked his head in at the door. Little Signor Bisi looked up from behind the register, dazed behind his rimless round glasses.
"Is it some kind of feast day, signore?"
he called to Signor Speranza. He gestured around at all the young people perusing the shelves.
"Where did they all come from?"
Signor Speranza stifled a whoop.
"It's the feast of Dante Rinaldi, signore! Santo Dante!"
He spun again on his heel and raced back to Speranza and Sons, visions of shiny pipes and piles of money swirling in his head. When he got there, he nudged open the door and hissed, "Smilzo, vieni!" Smilzo, who was sitting on the floor in the showroom, looked up from his copy of the script. At the back of the shop, Signor Speranza could see the actors on break and milling around the meat table. The schnauzer, with a final squirm, jumped to the floor and sped there also.
"Boss, what is it?"
Smilzo came over to the door. Signor Speranza dropped his voice to an urgent whisper.
"See if you can sneak back there and get me the money from the safe. Put it in the zip pouch. Make sure you count it. It's 68,700.
His head was swimming. There was a bank in Pardeska that did money orders. He would go there first, and then, if he hurried, he could deliver it in person to the Water Commission in Reggio before they closed. And then, after that, is 53... Signor Speranza's mind went blank. Che? Is 53, boss, said Smilzo again. Well, 53,700. Signor Speranza blinked. There was a strange buzzing sound in his ears. Smilzo, he said slowly, it is 68,700. I put it there myself. Smilzo nodded. I know. But on Tuesday, when you were out, I gave 15,000 to your zio Franco for building the amphitheater. For the cinema. He told me he'd talk to you about it. Smilso's ears turned pink. Was I not supposed to do that, boss? Signor Speranza sprinted to the flat field beyond the church, where once there had been a shabby paddock for a pair of donkeys, and where lately there had been just overgrown grass, broken fencing, and litter. "Zio!" he gasped as he arrived, halting abruptly and swaying on his feet. Zio Franco was there in his work clothes and cap and smoking a cigarette. His shirt sleeves were rolled to the elbows, and he was supervising a team of men who were methodically removing the turf within the circumference of a large circle that had been marked off with pickets. He waved when he saw his nephew and strolled over. "Pretty good, eh?" he said, glancing over his shoulder and waving his cigarette. "Tomorrow will be hard. We'll have to dig. It'll be tricky to get the slope right." He grinned, as if nothing in this world could delight him more. Signor Speranza was speechless. €15,000. €15,000! That was... His head throbbed with the computational effort. Over 29 million lira. An image of Prometto, empty and deserted, drifted across his consciousness, followed quickly by one of Signor Maestro in a gore-smeared apron. He shuddered. "Zio," he said weakly, "the money. Have you spent the money?" Zio Franco frowned and crossed his arms. "Of course I've spent the money. What do you think this is?" He swung one arm out. "I have to pay the men?" Then the other. "I have to buy supplies. Did my brother never teach you about money?" Signor Speranza looked up at the blue July sky. "Lord," he said simply, because all other words and thoughts failed him. Then a funny thing happened. It was a thing which had happened only once before, 50 years ago, when Signor Speranza had heard that Goffredo Fraternita had been hanging around the hotel, running errands for Betta's father and charming her mother. Signor Speranza had heard that Goffredo was going to ask Betta to marry him. This thing had happened then, too, when Signor Speranza had been pacing the floor of his bedroom in the middle of the night, wringing his hands and despairing of what to do. He smelled roses. There weren't any roses for kilometres around, and yet he smelled them, then in his bedroom and now here in this pit that only days ago had been filled with litter. The sweet fragrance bloomed all around him. "Mamma," he thought, with a sudden catch in his throat. Zio Franco was tapping his foot now. He looked the same somehow at 93, out in this field and wearing his brown cap, as he had when Signor Speranza was a child. "Can the grown-ups go back to work now or what?" he asked, impatient. "Si, Zio," said Signor Speranza simply, and with a strange sense of calm. "Go back to work. You're doing a good job." Betta listened carefully to Signor Speranza's tale of what had happened to the €15,000, and about going to get the money back from Zio, and finally about the sudden and engulfing fragrance of roses. She listened also to his story about the crowds he had seen at the café and the Emporio. Encouraging, yes, but enough to save them in the next 46 days? They were in bed with a Dante Rinaldi DVD playing on the television set, and Betta was sitting up, her back against the headboard and the coverlet pulled up to her waist. "Tickets, Nino. You will have to sell tickets," she said, crossing her arms, "and T-shirts. You can put this idiot's face on a T-shirt, and then you can sell that, too." Signor Speranza and Betta both glared at the TV. Dante Rinaldi, his sun-kissed skin liberally oiled, was busily employed in wearing a white tank top and aiming a lazy grin at his co-star.
"I will meet you at the café at 8, cara mia," he drawled.
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes.
"Why do we even own this film?" he grumbled. "Why does anyone own this film?"
Betta snapped paws on the remote.
"Nino, pay attention," she chided. "Here is the situation. Everyone is expecting for there to be a film. Signor Maestro Don Rocco, that assistant of yours, now even Zio with this outdoor cinema. So," she shrugged,
"give them what they want. Make a film." Signor Speranza frowned.
But nothing.
Betta waved an airy hand.
Sell tickets. Pay for the pipes. Finish the film. Simple. And if there is actually a film, you will not have to pay anyone back either.
This last remark caused Signor Speranza's moustache to stand on end. Fix the pipes and not pay anyone back. That was an intoxicating thought. Of course, reality immediately intruded.
"That won't work," he said, shaking his head.
"Maestro only gave the money because Dante Rinaldi was going to be in it. He would never have given it otherwise. He'll want his money back."
"Hmm," said Betta. "Maybe there's a way to make it look as though Dante Rinaldi is in it, even if he is not. I'll never think about that."
Signor Speranza stared up at the ceiling and sighed.
"I don't know if this can work. I would have to find someone to take Dante's role."
"What about Smilzo?" said Betta.
Signor Speranza snorted.
"Can you imagine? Maybe we can make it 3D. People will pay lots of money to worry that Smilzo's nose is going to poke them in the face."
Betta stifled a giggle.
"Don't be too hard on him, Nino. He wants this very badly."
She switched off the lamp on her nightstand, and the moonlight rushed in to fill the sudden darkness.
"I don't know," said Signor Speranza, thinking it over. "Smilzo is not exactly a matinee idol."
Betta shrugged and plumped up her pillow.
"Maybe you just have to give him a chance. I think he looks a little like Humphrey Bogart."
Signor Speranza shook his head.
"It's not possible, making a real film. We don't even know what we are doing."
The bedroom door opened, spilling a crack of light from the hallway across the bed, and then Carlotta and the puppy scampered in and were upon them, Carlotta giving the puppy a boost onto the blankets, where it ran in joyous circles and licked everybody's faces. Through some alchemy of the light straining through the door and the reflection of the TV on the window, the faint fragrance of Carlotta's strawberry shampoo and the velvety gloss of puppy fur, the moment collapsed in on itself, as some small, insignificant moments do, and Signor Speranza felt a strange sense of nostalgia, even as he was in the midst of living it.
"There are no dogs allowed in this bed!" he cried, seizing the miscreant by the scruff of its silky neck and depositing it on the floor. "And no monkeys, either!"
Now he grabbed Carlotta, who was shrieking happily, and turned her upside down by her ankles.
"Sorry, Papa,"
said Gemma, laughing and standing halfway in the door.
"They wanted to say good night."
Carlotta, who was right side up again, crossed her arms and glowered like a miniature version of her grandmother.
"This dog needs a name, Nonno. He is a Christian, and he needs a name. This has gone on too long now. It has been 3 days."
Signor Speranza blew upwards, fanning his moustache out.
"This dog is a Christian, huh? Has he been baptized? Is that what you're telling me, Cucuzza?"
Carlotta, whose catechism was not so sturdy, faltered slightly and glanced at her mother for assistance. Gemma only laughed again.
"Tell Nonna your idea, cara mia."
Carlotta's eyes danced with mischief.
"I think we should name him after your grandpa Guido, because they look as though they are twins."
Betta burst out laughing.
"Oh, my God, Nino, she's right. The same serious face, the same black and white beard, and the eyebrows."
She put her hands on her cheeks and shook her head.
"This dog is the spitting image."
Now Signor Speranza crossed his arms.
"And what do you know about my nonno Guido, Cucuzza?"
Gemma grinned.
"She saw him in the photo album on the mantel." "I'm sure nonno Guido would be honored if you named your little dog Guido," said Betta.
But Carlotta shook her head. Not Guido, nonna. Nonno Guido. That is his name.
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes.
Well, you had better get Nonno Guido out of here before he goes to the bathroom in my slippers. Now, go to bed.
Carlotta whooped and ran out of the room, and the tiny schnauzer streaked after her. Gemma made to close the door and then paused, sticking her head back in.
I was thinking, Papa, she said, her voice carefully casual. Sometimes in a film they have a makeup person.
I was just thinking that if you need anybody...
She trailed off and shrugged. Signor Speranza and Betta exchanged glances in the dark. Betta found her husband's hand and squeezed it.
All right, Gemma, said Signor Speranza lightly. Thank you for telling me.
Betta waited until Gemma had closed the door to squeal.
Did you hear that, Nino? She wants to help.
Ha ha!
She grabbed her husband's shoulder and shook it. But Signor Speranza frowned. His exhausted conscience, which had been struggling along these past 2 weeks like an oil-clogged engine, now fully seized up. It was one thing, he thought, telling Smilzo that he was going to have his screenplay made into a real film with a big-time film star. That was bad enough. And it was bad enough telling Antonella Capra she was going to act alongside Dante Rinaldi. It was bad enough raising the hopes of Ernesto Maestro and Serena Rossi and the Trezzas and the Beezys and the Sampronias and everyone else. He wasn't going to do that to Gemma. He wasn't going to lie to his little girl. His little girl who had always been so sensitive and highly strung and hopeful. His little girl who had, when she was 6 years old, entered a contest on the back of a box of cereal. Signor Speranza still thought of that box of cereal from time to time and cringed.
"Prize is a doll's house, Papa," she had told him. "When it comes, I am going to put it right next to my bed so I can keep track of it when I am sleeping."
She had cut the picture out of the box and hung it on her wall, and she had told all her little dolls and bears that it was coming. Then she had cut stars and hearts out of foil because it was a very fancy house, and a fancy house needed fancy decorations.
"Can we buy the house ourselves, Betta?"
Signor Speranza had whispered to his wife after Gemma went to bed, but when they found the house in a catalogue, it was more than they could afford.
"What about this house instead?"
Betta had asked Gemma cheerily at breakfast the next morning, pointing out a smaller, cheaper house. But Gemma had only shaken her head and eaten her cereal with the big panel missing out of the back of the box. She had been so sure in her warm, fragile, big, dreaming heart that everything she wanted was coming to her. And when it didn't, when the days turned to weeks and the weeks turned to months and the prize still didn't come, when the little silver hearts and stars on her night table shriveled and the picture of the house on her wall began to curl, she didn't say a word. Signor Speranza had just found them one afternoon in the bin. Here, now, he blinked at the dark ceiling. If Gemma wanted to be the makeup person for the film, if that was something that would make her happy, then he was going to move heaven and earth to make it happen. No more lies. Well, he hesitated. Dante Rinaldi wasn't really coming, so maybe just the one lie.
I'm going to try to do it better, he said slowly and cautiously. I'm going to try to make the film for real. But I can't promise you how it's going to turn out.
Betta gasped and clapped and hugged him, and then they settled down finally to sleep. They turned off the DVD, which was paused on Dante Rinaldi's smarmy face, and Signor Speranza closed his eyes. For a while his head swam with numbers, which was what always happened these days when he wasn't occupied with something else. Next came the parade of faces of all the people he was lying to. There was Don Rocco, pressing money into his hand. There was Ernesto Maestro, smiling dazedly at the cast list. There was Smilzo, his face glowing when he hit on the perfect act break for his screenplay. Then there was Signor Rossi.
I don't care if he never gets here, Signore. Just the promise of him coming has been like a miracle.
When they'd all passed by and had their say, Signor Speranza drifted off to sleep. 10 minutes later, Betta poked him in the arm.
Nino, she whispered excitedly.
What about a cardboard cutout?
It took Signor Speranza a moment to wake up and realize what she was talking about.
"What do you think?" she asked. "Maybe we can borrow Don Rocco's Roomba and have him sail by in the background. I think they call it a cameo appearance."
Chapter 13. Signor Maestro Calls in a Favor. The next morning, at work, Smilzo took the news that Dante Rinaldi had been unavoidably detained in his stride. Film stars, after all, were busy. He was more surprised to learn that he, Smilzo, was to succeed Dante in the leading role of Vincenzo.
"Me, boss?" Smilzo's mouth dropped open. "Are you sure you have got that right?"
Signor Speranza assured him that he had, and Smilzo began pacing the showroom floor, scribbling in his notebook and thinking out loud.
"Dante will have to have first billing, of course. I may have to rearrange the script to find somewhere new to put him that will not take very long to shoot. Maybe something like what Alfred Hitchcock did with Janet Leigh in Psycho. Have you seen that movie, boss?"
Signor Speranza wrinkled his nose.
"Dante is very busy," he said.
He recalled what Better had said last night about the cardboard cutout and the Roomba.
"Maybe you can find a place for him where he can just whiz by," he asked hopefully. "Like on a skateboard."
Smilzo was not listening.
"I will have to put a hold on the documentary, of course. I will not have time for that now."
He turned to Signor Speranza.
"Is there an update on anyone besides Dante, the camera crew, the director?"
Signor Speranza's moustache twitched, and he threw an apologetic glance at the ceiling. How was it that the lies just kept piling up?
He said that I will be the director."
Smilzo stopped pacing. He lifted his eyebrows.
"You, boss?"
Signor Speranza nodded. "Yes, me." There was a long silence, and he looked at Smilzo, his eyes narrowing.
"Why? What do you want to say about it?"
Smilzo shrugged and shook his head.
"Nothing, boss. It's just, when you were in the mines with Dante's father, was there some kind of collapse? Did you save his father's life or something?"
Better wasn't kidding about putting Dante Rinaldi's stupid face on a T-shirt. She was also putting it on water bottles, pillowcases, bumper stickers, and commemorative refrigerator magnets. Signor Speranza nearly fell over when he got home from work and walked into the living room.
"What is all this?" he gasped.
The place was stuffed with cardboard boxes, and there were T-shirts draped on every surface. A laser printer on the floor was spitting out glossy photos of Dante Rinaldi's face onto the rug. Betta was at the ironing board. Gemma was shrink-wrapping a photo to a water bottle with a hairdryer. Carlotta and Nonno Guido were running in circles, and the air held the faint, acrid smell of singed plastic. Betta looked up and beamed.
"Isn't it great? Me and the girls drove all the way to Citanova this morning to get the stuff. Terrific deals. We only spent 500 euros.
€500? Signor Speranza choked.
"What 500 euros?
He asked, coughing. Betta waved an airy hand.
"I stopped by the shop before we left, but you were in the bathroom. Smilzo gave it to me from the safe. I told him I talked to you about it."
Signor Speranza gazed up at the ceiling. 45 days left, and now this.
"Are you trying to kill me, Lord? Is that what this is? Death by Smilzo?"
"Can you take over the ironing, Nino?" asked Betta. "I want to call Antonella Capra about setting up a website to sell everything. She's very clever with computers."
Numbly, Signor Speranza took up the iron.
"How many T-shirts are there?" he asked, eyeing the boxes.
150, said Betta, leaving the room for the phone.
150. Signor Speranza ran the hot iron over the back of Dante Rinaldi's face as his well-practiced brain did some quick calculations. Following the €15,000 Zio catastrophe, the money for the pipes had dwindled from 70,000 down to 55,000. Now Betta had taken another 500, leaving them at 54,500. If she was right about these shirts, and if people would pay perhaps €20 apiece, They could add 3,000 euros to that number, putting them at 57,500. The knots in his stomach loosened. That was not so bad. Plus, there was all this other stuff. He glanced over at Gemma, who had just turned off the blow-dryer and was examining the finished water bottle. "What do you think?" she asked, holding it up. "Is this the face you want to see every time you have a drink of water?" she giggled. Betta came back in. "It's all set. Antonella is going to go to the shop tomorrow afternoon and help you design the website. She's very excited." Signor Speranza frowned. "And how will people find this website? What if it gets lost in cyberspace?" Gemma giggled again. "Nobody says cyberspace, Papa!"
"Cyberspace!"
shouted Carlotta, and she ran in faster and faster circles, Nonno Guido nipping joyfully at her heels. "Antonella is going to take care of that also," said Berta. "She's going to send the link to her followers." Signor Speranza rolled his eyes. There went the 3,000 euros, then, unless Antonella's 17 followers were going to buy 150 T-shirts. She's going to add a feature for buying tickets, too. People will be able to purchase them and print them at home. At this news, Signor Speranza experienced a simultaneous glug of hope and terror. Tickets. Tickets implied that the film would someday be finished and ready to watch. Did he really believe they would be able to do that? Nonno Guido stopped running in circles. He sat down and gave three sharp barks. "I think he needs to go out, Carlotta," said Gemma, standing up from the couch. "Come on, Cucuzza, you can help me." Signor Speranza watched until the girls were safely out of earshot. Then he turned to his wife. "Betta, do you think it's a good idea to have all these Dante Rinaldi faces around?" he asked, thinking of Antonella's obsession. He lowered his voice to a whisper. "We do not want Gemma getting attached." Betta threw her head back and let out a peal of laughter. "Nino, come on! Gemma does not like Dante Rinaldi." Signor Speranza was relieved. "No?" "Of course not." Betta took back the iron. "Any fool can see. She likes Ernesto Maestro." Ernesto Maestro. Signor Speranza trudged to the shop on Sunday afternoon, his brow lowering darkly and muttering under his breath. It was all very well for a son of Signor Maestro to sing the Ave Maria with the voice of an angel, but Signor Speranza was not fooled. The apple did not fall far from the tree. He recalled the night he had visited Signor Maestro's house, and Signora Maestro, who was not even allowed to pick out her own wall sconces, scurrying in and out of the dining room with those endless bowls of nuts. And the dogs. How would Gemma do with a pack of wild dogs for company? And the laundry. Signor Speranza shuddered. Who did Gemma think washed all those disgusting aprons? "What do you make of this situation, Papa?" he asked out loud. It had been a long time since Signor Speranza had consulted with his father. His head had been so cluttered with numbers. Thankfully, Luigi Speranza was still exactly where he was supposed to be, sitting on his bucket at the back of his son's mind and stringing his bunches of peppers. "I think you should think about something else, Giovannino," he said, nodding over his ball of string. "What about this film now? I hear you are going to be a director." Signor Speranza drew himself up a little taller. "That's right, Papa. I am going to direct a film. Are you surprised?" Luigi cocked his head to one side. "I was thinking, if you're going to be in charge, maybe you'll need a hat, like Smilzo." Signor Speranza snorted. The idea of a hat like Smilzo's was ridiculous. And yet, he thought, slowing in his stride, perhaps a different sort of hat might be appropriate. The right hat, worn by the right person, of course, might serve as a subtle signal of authority and command respect. Not a black beret, obviously. Smilzo's instincts were seldom correct. Signor Speranza thought instead of a khaki explorer hat with a floppy brim, the kind that tied under the chin with a leather string. That might look imposing, especially if he were to pair it with a matching vest. It was worth looking into. If he were going to be the director, the village would expect him to look the part. Cheered by thoughts of his new director's costume, Signor Speranza got to the shop and found Smilzo sitting on the floor, surrounded by scattered pages and his laptop working on the screenplay.
"What are you doing here?" Signor Speranza asked, tossing his keys on the desk. "There is no work today."
"I know, boss," said Smilzo. "I could not concentrate at home."
Signor Speranza went into the stockroom and dragged out the old computer Gemma had used when she was at school, and which he had been storing in the shop ever since.
"Antonella is coming to set up a website," he said.
Smilzo nodded.
"She told me."
He held up a page of script.
"Boss, let me ask you something. At the end of the set piece, Antonia and Vincenzo are supposed to kiss."
Signor Speranza frowned. "So?"
"So,"
Smilzo's face turned pink,
"now that I am playing Vincenzo, do you think maybe I should cut it?"
Signor Speranza was confused.
"Why would you cut it? Don't you want to kiss Antonella?"
Smilzo blinked.
"Of course I do, but that is exactly why I think I should cut it. I want her to want to kiss me, but if I put it in the script that she has to, it is as if I am cheating."
Signor Speranza had no time to contemplate this logic, because the bell over the door jingled and Antonella arrived.
"Ciao, signore, Smilzo,"
she called, looking at her phone, but when they tried to return her greeting, she held up a finger.
"One second. I just need to send Dante one more message."
Signor Speranza's eyebrows and his blood pressure shot up.
"What?"
He hastened from his desk to the front of the shop.
"What do you mean, signorina?"
he asked, a strange skittering feeling coming over his chest.
"What do you mean you are sending Dante a message?"
Antonella did not look up from her speedy typing.
"I told you, signore," she said, sounding a little exasperated. "It's social media. I can talk to everyone."
She removed one hand from her phone to wave it in the general vicinity.
"Did I tell you that I'm up to 700 followers now, signore? Did I tell you that?"
Signor Speranza's mouth went dry and he licked his lips.
"What did you say to him?"
he managed to whisper. Antonella shrugged.
"I just told him we are all looking forward to him getting here for the film, and that we're disappointed it's taking so long."
"And," Signor Speranza urged, his head threatening to burst, "did he write back? Did Signor Rinaldi write back?"
Antonella finished typing and sighed.
"Not yet, signore."
Then she brightened.
"But once he comes here and I get to meet him, he'll always reply to my messages. It'll be different then."
"Yes," echoed Smilzo, staring at the litter of script pages on the floor.
"Different."
Signor Speranza's heart began to return to its normal rhythm. Antonella was not talking to Dante. She was talking to the internet. That was almost the same as talking to herself. It was all make-believe. He threw a glance at the ceiling.
"Thank you." "I still don't understand why you gave the main part to Smilzo, signore,"
Antonella said, frowning. Smilzo's face turned pink to the tips of his ears.
"It doesn't make sense that Dante would not want that role for himself,"
she continued, puzzling it over. Then suddenly her face went white and she gasped.
"It's not because of me, is it? You didn't send Dante a picture of me and then he backed out."
Her hands flew to her hair and picked at it like two scrawny birds.
"Are you crazy?" cried Smilzo, indignant. "Of course that is not what happened. That would not be possible."
Antonella gave him a watery smile.
"Thank you, Smilzo," she said.
Then she turned to Signor Speranza, her chin still trembling.
"That's not what happened, right, signore?"
"No, no, signorina."
Signor Speranza held up his hands.
"It's a scheduling problem, that's all. He could not commit to such a large part."
Antonella took a long, shaky breath.
"Okay, that's good."
She pointed at the computer at the back of the room.
"Do you want me to get started?"
Smilzo scrambled to his feet.
"Come on, you can use my laptop instead. We can take it to the cafe."
No sooner had the two of them left than the bell jingled again, and Signor Maestro stood in the door, his arms crossed and his face a thundercloud.
"Speranza,"
he said, his low and rumbling voice resonating through the very timbers of Speranza and Sons, and causing the floor to shake under Signor Speranza's feet. A word. Signor Speranza's nerves had never performed at their level best in the company of the butcher, even under the most benign circumstances. But now, seeing that he was in debt to him to the tune of 68,000 euros, and living in a web of lies, he found the prospect of being alone with him at the shop when all decent people were at home enjoying their Sunday lunch petrifying. What could it be now? Signor Speranza racked his brains. Ernesto had been fine at the shoot on Friday, hadn't he? He squinted, trying to remember. He had seen him practicing his singing and eating brazaola and chatting with the other actors. He had not seen him running anywhere or colliding with any trees. "If you will just have a seat," Signor Speranza directed Signor Maestro to the folding chair next to his desk, and then bustled into the back room, calling over his shoulder, "How do you take your coffee, Signore? For myself, I like to put milk and 3 sugars, but black." Signor Maestro grunted. Signor Speranza made the coffee, sloshing half of it on the counter, and put it on a tray with a plate of cookies. "What can I do for you today, Signore?" he asked heartily as he bore the tray to his desk, where he found Signor Maestro sitting in his leather swivel chair and pawing casually through the contents of his drawers. Signor Speranza's moustache stood on end. What if now, at this late hour, the butcher were to discover the water report? Signor Speranza could picture it now, folded crisply and tucked under the heavy walnut box that held his gavel. He put the tray down with a clatter. "Very hot!" he shouted. "Don't you think, Signor, it's very hot today?" In one movement he deposited a coffee cup and saucer in front of Signor Maestro with one hand, and with the other snapped the desk drawer shut. "Cookie?" he asked, sliding into the folding chair and waving the plate under Signor Maestro's nose. Signor Maestro batted the plate away like a bear with a bee. Signor Speranza took a 2 large bite of cookie. "Is this about Ernesto?" he asked thickly, spraying crumbs. "Is he not happy with the role, after all?" For the second time that afternoon his heart skittered. What if Ernesto wanted to quit the production? What if Signor Maestro had come to request a refund? Signor Speranza glanced at the safe and then at the ceiling. "If you are trying to kill me, Lord, you are taking the long way." But Signor Maestro shook his ponderous head. "No." He picked up his coffee and drained the entire cup in a single go. Then he leaned back in Signor Speranza's chair and crossed his arms over his chest. "I have come to ask a favor. I need Dante Rinaldi to do a commercial for my butcher's shop." A muscle under Signor Speranza's left eye twitched. "A commercial, Signore?" He squirmed and ate another cookie. Signor Maestro swept his hands, palms out, in front of him. "Only the best shop at Maestro's." He dropped his hands. "And then maybe a cartoon chicken or something could fly into Dante's mouth." Signor Speranza choked on powdered sugar and pounded his chest with his fist. "A chicken, Signore? You wish for a whole chicken to fly into Dante Rinaldi's mouth?" Signor Maestro shrugged. "Could also be a chicken cutlet," he said, unconcerned. "That would also be all right." Signor Speranza returned his eyes to the ceiling. He had, of course, consulted the compendium already with regard to butchers, but he was still at odds over how to direct his prayers in this matter, especially after what had happened with St. Vincent Ferrer and the pipes. He was not going to appeal for help to a saint who, after all, might be biased in Signor Maestro's favour. He did not wish to pray for a butcher, which was probably what the makers of the compendium supposed, but rather for deliverance from a butcher. Seeing as this was an emergency, and he was pressed for time, with a butcher actually in his midst and staring him down at this very moment, he sent up a quick petition to Our Lady Comfort of the Afflicted, a handy catch-all for situations such as these. "I don't know, Signore," he said slowly and delicately when he was finished praying, "whether film stars make commercials for butcher's shops. I do not think they do." Signor Maestro puffed out his chest. "Then mine will be the first one." Signor Speranza frowned.
I don't think Dante...
he began again.
He'll do it, said Signor Maestro, standing up and rapping his knuckles on the desktop. He owes me big for the film.
He started towards the door and pointed at Signor Speranza.
When he comes here, you get me a meeting, or maybe I want my money back. Capisci?
Signor Speranza's heart fluttered.
Si, signore, he whimpered. Capisco.
Chapter 14. Technology is hard. On learning of her husband's hankering for a special outfit to mark his directorial debut, Betta took a break from manufacturing T-shirts and went with Carlotta to the second-hand store in Screezer on Sunday afternoon, coming back with two plastic bags filled with a khaki explorer hat that exactly matched his specifications, a vest with pockets, a pair of roomy cargo shorts, forest green knee socks, and a megaphone.
"I thought you might have to shout at people from across a room," she explained.
Signor Speranza, who had never even considered the need for such equipment, was beguiled. Examining it, he was reminded of a documentary filmmaker he had seen on TV once, sitting at the top of a hydraulic lift on set in the Sahara. He described it now to his wife.
"Hydraulics?" She frowned, pondering it, and then her face brightened. "I'll call Beppe Zello. Maybe he'll have a dentist's chair you can borrow."
The new website launched first thing Monday morning, its birth heralded by a flurry of social media postings from Antonella. By 2 o'clock, they were sold out of T-shirts, and by 5, the only unclaimed item was a magnet of Dante Rinaldi's smiling face, which Carlotta took and stuck to the front of the refrigerator.
"Maybe Antonella is talking to everyone," said Signor Speranza, a bit dizzy as he sat at the kitchen table reviewing the receipts.
They made €3,000 on the T-shirts, €500 on water bottles, €75 on magnets, and €325 on pillowcases. Additionally, they sold 251 tickets for the premiere at €7 a ticket, for a total of €1,757. With 43 days to go until the Water Commission cut the water, they were at €60,157.
"We're going to have to set a date for the premiere, Nino," said Betta, who was looking at the calendar on the fridge. "I cannot keep telling everyone TBD.
Signor Speranza frowned and shuffled his feet. Having once declared that he would make the film, he was now having serious doubts that he was up for the challenge.
"I don't know about saying a specific date," he said, evasive. "That's a very final decision. Maybe we'll have to cancel after all."
Betta's eyebrows shot up.
"What, and pay everyone back for the tickets?"
She shook her head and turned to the August page.
"They're shutting the water off on a Monday, right? We'll do the Friday before that."
Signor Speranza looked up at the ceiling and groaned. How was he going to shoot an entire film that fast? How? But Betta wasn't having it.
"You need to snap out of it, Nino," she said sharply, hands on hips.
On Tuesday, which was to be the second day of filming, and Signor Speranza's first official day as director, he lunched early with Don Rocco at the café. The priest frowned over his plate of pane paccio. Signora Catuzza, who was still trying to adjust the scale of her cooking to the sudden influx of patrons at the café, had overbaked for the week, and now she had turned her stale leftovers into a dish of old bread soaked until softened in a simmering slurry of olives, scallions, and thinned tomato sauce. But Don Rocco was not frowning about the food.
"There's going to be a premiere," he said incredulously, "here in Prometo, and in less than 6 weeks."
Signor Speranza, who was garbed in his new outfit, shuddered on the inside at these words, but on the outside he managed to maintain a calm expression. He cut a chunk of pane paccio with the side of his fork and waved an airy hand.
"You know how it is, father," he said. "The wheels turn more quickly when one is unfettered by the studio system."
He found it was easier to lie to the priest if he used industry terms, like Antonella. Was it really lying if he did not totally understand what he was saying? Don Rocco laid down his fork.
"And Dante Rinaldi is coming, or he is not coming. I do not understand that situation."
Signor Speranza took a hasty gulp of iced water and then a large bite of food.
"A cameo," he said, looking at his plate. "He will only have time for a cameo."
It was not necessary for Don Rocco to know the means by which Betta was planning for this cameo to be accomplished. A priest did not need to know everything.
Don Rocco's forehead creased. "But what about the butcher? I've heard he has big plans for a commercial."
Signor Speranza winced. He had not, since Signor Maestro's visit to the shop 2 days ago, even allowed his mind to wander in that direction. There was not enough space in his brain. He would have to deal with it later. He wiped his mouth with his napkin.
"Dante's people are handling it," he said,
and found that just saying these words out loud sparked an idea. He would not have to turn Signor Maestro down. He would have Dante Rinaldi's people do it instead. Yes, a letter, was the answer, something on nice stationery. "Dear sir, although we admire your business acumen and have no doubt as to the quality of your fine meats and poultry, we regret to inform you that Dante Rinaldi would never, not in 1,000 years, do a commercial for a great big dope like you." Signor Speranza suppressed a smile at this thought. Well, it would go something like that, anyway. He could even drive under cover of darkness to Rome so that the letter might have an authentic postmark. What was a 13-hour drive when a butcher with 15 sons was breathing down one's neck? Nothing.
Don Rocco was frowning again. "And what kind of film is it?"
Signor Speranza relaxed. This he could talk about all day long. He picked up his butter knife to assist his fork and eagerly sawed at his lunch.
"It's great, father," he enthused. "Smilzo is putting in everything we like. Romance, action, spies, musical comedy."
Don Rocco looked appropriately amazed.
"He's putting in all those things, signore. I don't think I've ever seen a film like that. What's it called?"
Signor Speranza swept out his hand.
"Giovannino Speranza's great Italian movie."
He waited for a reaction. Don Rocco blinked. Signor Speranza flushed.
"It's a working title," he muttered, spearing a large chunk of sodden bread with his fork. "But trust me, father, it is going to knock your socks off."
"Speaking of socks," said the priest, peering over the side of the table. Signor Speranza looked down. Something was tugging on his sock with its tiny, needling teeth.
"No, no, Guido," he grumbled.
Then he turned to Don Rocco.
"Father," he said, keeping very still, "are you finished with that?"
He indicated the small can of aranciata next to the priest's plate.
"This can," said Don Rocco, picking it up, puzzled. "It's empty. Why?"
Signor Speranza did not have time to explain. Even now, the tensile strength of his new forest green knee sock was being sorely tested.
"Listen to me," he hissed. "I need you to throw that can at the ground directly next to my foot."
Don Rocco glanced at the can and then under the table, where Nonno Guido, his teeth firmly attached to his master's sock, was doing his best to rip it clean in two.
"Throw the can, father!"
Signor Speranza roared. Whether Don Rocco threw the can or it jumped out of his hands, it hit the ground with a crack and a burst of orange-scented droplets, and Nonno Guido, startled out of his wits, let loose the sock, which puckered damply at Signor Speranza's ankle, and took off like a shot for Speranza and Sons. Signor Speranza returned to the shop after lunch to find Beppe Zello's second-best hydraulic dental chair installed next to the stockroom. He inspected it, his mood rising. Maybe things were not so bad. He was excited to test out this chair and the megaphone, which lay ready on his desk. He was also excited to say action, and had practiced it this morning in the mirror. The maestro problem was as good as dealt with. And then there was this business with Nonno Guido and the aranciata can. There was no denying that had been a huge success. As if he didn't have enough to think about with the film, Signor Speranza was struggling to turn Nonno Guido into a functioning member of society. He had spent an hour last night looking for solutions on the internet after discovering the young vagabond in the back garden licking slugs, and had finally stumbled upon the tip about the tin can.
"Your dog is not complicated,"
said the stern, bald man in the video, who was standing in a large barn-like enclosure with an unsuspecting Labrador.
If he's looking at a squirrel, he's thinking about a squirrel. If he's chasing a ball, it's because he wants to catch it.
Signor Speranza had sat up a little straighter. Here was a man with confidence. Here was a man who would not allow a schnauzer to ruin his life. The man had gone on to explain and demonstrate that if a dog was engaged in some negative activity, such as the chewing of one's sneaker, then all one needed to do was throw a tin can, perhaps with a couple of pennies inside it, next to whatever it was the dog was doing.
The dog will be so focused he'll think it's the sneaker that has produced the sound and will quickly learn to leave it alone.
Signor Speranza had been dubious, but now he had seen the theory in action. Don Rocco had thrown the orange juice can, and Nonno Guido had stopped chewing on his sock. If that was not a miracle, it was at least miracle-adjacent. The cast and crew began arriving at 12:30.
"Hi, Papa,"
called Gemma with a nervous smile as she came in carrying her little bag of makeup and brushes. Signor Speranza waved.
"Nice chair, signore,"
said Antonella, and Signor Speranza was on the point of showing her how to work the pedal that operated the hydraulics when she hopped into the chair without permission, fluffed her hair, and snapped a selfie. At 1 o'clock, Signor Speranza availed himself of the megaphone and ordered everyone to be quiet. Two of the Maestro brothers brought in a table and chairs borrowed from the cafe and arranged them on the showroom floor. Smilzo and Antonella, as Vincenzo and Antonia, took their seats. Carmelo Trezza, who had proved he had a steady hand on Friday, once again held the shadeless lamp, dragging it over on its cord. Pietro Maestro took over camera duties, while Gemma put the finishing touch on Antonella's lipstick and a last dusting of powder on Smilzo's pointy nose.
Signor Speranza, his dental chair raised to its maximum height, raised his megaphone and called, "Action!"
Antonella crossed her arms.
"I do not care about the war, Vincenzo, or the spies at the Pentagon or MI6. I only care if you love me."
Smilzo produced a cigarette and tucked it into the corner of his mouth.
"Whatever you say, doll, if you want to escape with me, I am all for it." "Oh, Vincenzo,"
Antonella leapt to her feet and held the back of her wrist to her forehead,
"if there is any way for us to escape, then we will have to steal the president's Ferrari, the one with the fuel-injected carburetor. It's the only car in the world that is fast enough for us to get away."
Smilzo jumped to his feet also and grabbed Antonella's hands.
"Then we will steal it, babe. You can count on me."
They both continued to stand there, each holding their poses, until Smilzo turned his head.
"I think you should say cuts now, boss," he said in a stage whisper.
Signor Speranza, who in the excitement had forgotten that he was supposed to do this, scowled and allowed a few more seconds to pass so that it would be clear to everyone who was in charge, before lifting the megaphone, "Cut!" They took a break at 3, and everyone wandered around the shop, chatting. Signor Speranza was just coming out of the bathroom when he spotted Ernesto Maestro sitting in Gemma's makeup chair next to the rack of vacuum cleaner bags. Gemma was applying makeup to Ernesto's face with a sponge and laughing, and Nonno Guido lay under the chair, contentedly chewing the shop's phone book to pulpy shreds. Signor Speranza drew his mouth up into his moustache.
"Hmm,"
he grumbled, and stalked back to his desk.
"How long has he been here?"
he whispered to Smilzo, throwing his thumb over his shoulder in Ernesto's direction.
"He isn't on the call sheet for today."
Smilzo, who was sitting on a vacuum canister beside the desk, his black felt beret askew, was absorbed in putting the finishing touches on the next scene. He looked up, as if surfacing from underwater, his eyes glazed.
"Who is here, boss?"
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes, but before he could continue, the telephone rang. He sat down at his desk and picked it up without thinking, so busy was he staring beadily at Ernesto, who had probably 8 centimetres of pancake makeup on his face and the personality of a boulder, but who was nonetheless somehow making Gemma laugh until she snorted.
"Pronto,"
he grumbled into the receiver. "Speranza and Sons."
"Hello," said a quavering voice. "Can I speak to Dante, please?"
Then the voice broke into a giggle, and there were giggles in the background also. Signor Speranza took the receiver away from his ear and frowned at it.
"Who is this?" he barked. "What do you want?"
The giggles increased in both volume and pitch, and then there was a clattering sound like the phone dropping, and then the muffled sound of the receiver being dragged over fabric, and finally, whoever it was, rang off. Signor Speranza was indignant. He swept his eyes around the shop. "I think Antonello is making prank calls," he said, hanging up the phone. "Laughing and laughing and asking to talk to Dante."
"No, boss," Smilzo shook his head. "It's not Antonella, look."
Smilzo produced the pad on which all messages for Speranza and Sons were to be recorded. He flipped through three densely written pages.
"Has been happening all morning when you were out. Once when Antonella was standing right next to me."
"Give me that." Signor Speranza snatched the pad and pored over the messages, all of which were written in Smilzo's peculiar back-slanting hand.
"Is Dante there? When will Dante be arriving? Can you please tell me Dante's favourite colour? I am knitting him a scarf."
And so on and so forth.
"What does this mean?" said Signor Speranza, dazed. "How do they know to call here?"
Smilzo shrugged.
"Antonella has been posting about the film a lot. She's up to 1,000 followers, you know. I think one of the pictures must have had the shop in the background."
Signor Speranza frowned. And yet there had been no calls regarding vacuum cleaner repair. Wasn't that typical of the current generation? All flash, no substance.
"What did you tell them?" he asked, agitated.
"I just said he isn't here yet, boss," said Smilzo. "Mostly they were nice about it. There was only one who yelled at me."
Signor Speranza pulled a face.
"Yelled at you? For what?"
"I don't know, boss. She was crazy. She was pretending to be Dante's agent. She was very rude. I had to hang up."
Signor Speranza was startled. Dante's agent? That was a very strange angle for some young girl to pursue in a prank call. Gemma's voice carried from the front of the shop.
"Let's go outside and see how it looks in natural light."
Then she, Ernesto, and Nonno Guido, who had tired of phone books, exited the shop, the bell jingling behind them. Signor Speranza watched them go, and once they had strolled out of sight, he leapt from his chair.
"Smilzo, quick," he whispered. "That blinking box of yours with the button. You have it with you."
Smilzo was mystified, but he retrieved his backpack and rooted in it, producing the box and the matching remote.
"This, boss?" he asked.
"Tape it to the chair."
Signor Speranza gestured wildly at Ernesto's abandoned seat in the showroom.
"Underneath. Tape it underneath."
Smilzo accomplished this nefarious task, flitting amongst the mingling cast and crew, pink in the face, and stubbing his toe twice on a Hoover upright, and when he was finished, his nerves shot, he fled to the back room to splash water on his face. Signor Speranza, for his part, hunched at his desk, ignoring the chatter around him, his eyes focused on the front door and the remote clenched in his fist. The bell jingled, and Nonno Guido streaked in first, darting under the desk and romping at his master's feet, but Signor Speranza paid him no attention. He concentrated on Gemma and Ernesto, who were oblivious to everyone around them. He waited for the perfect moment, when Ernesto had sat down, and Gemma had turned her back to him to peruse her little pots of makeup. He opened his hand, spun the volume dial on the remote all the way up, and pressed the red button. Everyone turned and stared at Signor Speranza. Signor Speranza's mouth dropped open. Nonno Guido yelped and dashed into the stockroom.
"Ha!" said Ernesto Maestro.
"Papa!"
said Gemma, and then everyone burst out laughing.
"Oh!"
said Smilzo, who had sidled out from the back room, his face a nauseating shade of purplish green. He reached into his backpack, which was still open on Signor Speranza's desk, and fished out the correct blinking black box, the one that was a remote-controlled farting machine, and not, like the device that was currently taped to the underside of Ernesto Maestro's chair, a convenient and compact external hard drive.
"Sorry, boss," he mumbled.